Hey, this is Ronde Barber, former Virginia Cavalier, now Class of 2023 Pro Football Hall of Famer. You're listening to the Jerry Ratcliff Show.
Welcome to another episode of the Jerry Ratcliff Show. I'm your host, Jerry Ratcliff, also known as Hootie to many of our followers. And it's my great pleasure today. We're going to be talking Virginia hoops with someone who knows college basketball inside and out, particularly the Wahoos, and well, just about any team. Actually, this guy watches more basketball than Dick Vitale. I'm talking about Luke Neer, who's host of The Best Seat in the House on WINA here in Charlottesville, the home of the Virginia Wahoos. And Luke, again, he spends endless hours watching not just Virginia and ACC basketball, but he asks him about anybody in any conference in the country, and he can break them down for you. Luke, welcome to the show, brother.
Jerry, thanks for the kind words. Looking forward to talking Hoos, looking forward to talking ACC. We'll stay away from the Big Sky today. I'm sure that's probably what your listeners are looking for.
Some of our listeners probably don't even know what the Big Sky is.
we'll keep it local. That's our forte when you and I go back and forth. So we'll talk Wahoos and a little bit of ACC. It sounds great.
Yeah, okay. Well, obviously, the big game is tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, regular season finale at John Paul Jones Arena, Virginia. Third in the ACC as we speak. With a 21-9 record, 12-7 in the ACC. We'll be hosting Georgia Tech, tied for 11th in the ACC, with a 14-16 overall record and 7-12 in the conference. Virginia, I wouldn't say steamrolled, but they beat Georgia Tech without too much sweat in Atlanta several weeks ago, and this will be the rematch. I guess there's a lot of topics, Luke, going into tomorrow night. One, it'll be senior night. They'll be saying goodbye to Reese Bigman, Jordan Miner, Jake Groves, and Tristan Howell, along with some of the managers. But the big thing, I guess, on the minds of Virginia fans is what's this game going to do for Virginia going into next week's ACC tournament in Washington, D.C., and still a little bit up in the air. This team, Luke, every time we think we've got them figured out, they throw us a curve.
No doubt. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and take a look at the stakes, Jerry, because you mentioned that, and this is must-win territory unless Virginia can somehow manufacture a trip to the ACC tournament title game. And I think that's not a likely scenario, seeing as how they'd have to go through Duke again, barring some type of catastrophic upset in the quarters in D.C. So that means this game is of extreme magnitude. And we saw what happened to Wake Forest when they dropped a home game to Georgia Tech. They went from being in the last four in to the next four out in the blink of an eye. So just like that, a home loss to Georgia Tech sunk the Wake Forest ship, but I don't think they can recover unless they make some real noise in D.C. So, yeah, obviously the game is must-win territory, but Virginia has been through this. They went up to Chestnut Hill on the road at Boston College and got that victory, even the stakes were incredibly high then. So they're accustomed to the territory. I'm not too worried about that. They'll have the crowd behind them. Georgia Tech can throw some haymakers on the road. It's not just this win at Joel Coliseum that happened earlier on in the week. I mean, they were really close to Cameron against the Duke team. They beat them in Atlanta, but if you watch that game in Durham between Wake Forest and Duke, and that's before Duke really found their stride, that was a one possession game late. So it's certainly a dangerous Georgia Tech team. I'm glad you mentioned it's senior night, because I was perusing some statistics and I was thinking back in this era, in this run, that most of us date all the way back to, say, 2012, 2013, 14 territory. Virginia on senior nights has not lost except for one occasion, and that was in 2022, which wasn't the last game of the regular season. That was when Matthew Cleveland hit that wild shot and Florida State shocked them at the buzzer. Other than that, Virginia has won on senior day / senior night throughout the entire era. So that's one thing they have going for them. They've got competitors, and when they know it's their last time playing John Paul Jones Arena, they bring it. Now, obviously, the opponent list has played into that. They've had some Notre Dames. They've had some bad Louisville teams on senior day. They've had Pitt on a few occasions. It's not been a murderer's row in the last game of the year. But still, I think Reese Beekman could fit into that category of being a longtime Wahoo who's not going to lose on his final game at John Paul Jones Arena. So that's just a theory of mine.
No, I would tend to agree with you there, because if anybody has exceeded my expectations on this team this year, it's been Reese Beekman. And I had high expectations for him. And even though opponents try to game plan around him and take him out, he seems to will his way into being a difference maker in most every game, Luke. I mean, they've taken him out of a couple of games with incredibly concentrated defense, but for the most part, he's been amazing. He puts the team on his back, and if he can't take him to the winner's circle, he at least tries to, even though sometimes he doesn't have any help. So I would think that wild horses couldn't keep him away from trying to deliver a win tomorrow night. And, you know, you got to think that Groves and Miner are also going to really give it their best, and not just to help send themselves out, but to help help this team secure a badly needed win going into the tournament. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Beekman is, to beat him on senior night, it's going to take a monumental effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit more on Reese's year, because he's most likely going to repeat as ACC Defensive Player of the Year. When's the last time we saw that? I can't remember.
I don't know if there has been one.
From everybody who I've talked to, he's going to be on the first team. Especially after, you know, Salas kind of fading down the home stretch and losing these three games in a row for Wake Forest. I don't see the case for Henson in that scenario. I think Reese Beekman has to be on the team. I think he's also ahead of Baycott. I mean, I'm sure some people will make a push for Baycott over Beekman, but I think he makes first team all of ACC. He's got the steals record now, as you know, Jerry. So a pretty magnificent final year here at the university for Reese Beekman. And a few other notes. The fact that he's had to give so much on the offensive end is probably caused him, and we've seen this, and Tony Bennett's even alluded to it, that he's actually taking a few possessions off defensively, you know, due to pure physical constraints. And I'm curious to see if, since the finish line is in sight, if he cranks up the defense again because it's March. And what does that look like? And do we start to see that against Georgia Tech? I think there's a chance that could be the scenario.
We can ask Davis what it's like from Carolina.
No doubt, yeah.
What was he, 1 of 14 against Beekman?
Really only manufacturing points at the foul line. That's pretty much how he got his in that game.
Exactly. I think he can testify what it's like to face the full brunt of Reese Beekman's defensive fury. But, the guy's been amazing. I tell you, to break Othell Wilson's 40-year-old steals record at Virginia is I don't think that enough was made out of that. Because there, a lot of people maybe don't know that much about Othell Wilson. And I tell you, Othell Wilson was one of the nastiest defenders I've ever seen.
Yes, he was.
In college basketball. I mean, he would make people cry almost. He would reduce people. He would humble them to like they'd never been humbled before when he got in their face and just shut them down for 40 minutes. But for him to break a record that's been standing for 40 years, that's you can't give him enough credit for that. It's somewhat unbelievable.
Yeah, and in addition, he did it in low possession basketball games. That's
yeah,
another factor
good
in the
point.
Steal record, because you know, even passing guys like Sean, he was playing in, you know, back and forth transition Gallinari style games for the most part, and then some Leto, obviously, because that carried over when they made that change and Sean showed up and he, you know, was being coached by Dave Leto. So yeah, the fact that he did it under low possession games says a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be an emotional pregame, I'm sure, tomorrow when they bring out those seniors and their families. I don't think it'll get to the point where it's so emotional that it will impact their play in a negative way. I think it'll get them pretty fired up. But this Georgia Tech team, as you mentioned, you can't disregard them, even though they've only won 14 games this year. They and Virginia has an 11 game winning streak over the Yellow Jackets, and they won the last nine in a row against Tech here at JPJ. So in that first meeting down in Atlanta, Georgia Tech could not do what other teams have done to shut Virginia down. They most teams to beat Virginia, you've got to handle McNeely and Bigman, and Georgia Tech failed to do either one. McNeely had 20 points, Bigman had 19. And I you know, we were talking to Damon Stoudemire, the Tech coach, earlier this week on the teleconference, and he was talking about Bigman, and he said, well, you know, he's the head of the snake, but they couldn't handle the head of the snake in Atlanta. So if they couldn't handle him there, I don't see how they're going to handle him here. I think if Bigman gets any help from his teammates tomorrow, I think they'll be okay.
A couple of more notes if we're reflecting on that January the 28th meeting in Atlanta with Georgia Tech. They had that 23-3 run,
right?
As fans like to call it, a cavalanche, from the tail end of the first half and into the early goings of the second half, because they trailed in that game by 11. But
yeah,
and I think a lot of us were thinking, oh, here we go again. They're going to roll over on the road and the season might be over. But that was a big turning point, because that was fresh off a Virginia Tech win. But that's what snapped the road losing skid against the Georgia Tech team. And how did they do it? Well, it was a little bit of everything. It was Brees, like you said, and it was also McNeely hitting some threes. I mean, he was hit 6 of 9, 6 of 10 in that game against Georgia Tech. So that was big. But what I look at is how much flow they had offensively in space and movement. And if you reflect back on that Georgia Tech, if you watch some of the film, it looks more like vintage Virginia that we've been used to over this incredible run. There's space, there's fluidity, there's decisiveness. And we saw some of that against Boston College. That's the last time I think we've seen it. And I actually think it's beneficial to Virginia to have a little bit of a quicker tempo against a team like Georgia Tech, who's going to give you opportunities. Georgia Tech's not going to turn Virginia over. They're one of the worst teams in the country in steal percentage, and Virginia does not turn the ball over. So they're going to have a lot of opportunities. I wouldn't expect more than just several turnovers in this game from the Cavs, judging from how they protect the ball and how Georgia Tech likes to defend. So I do see some opportunities. What I don't want to see is for this one to become a grinder, even though Virginia's won grinders at home. Like the Wake Forest game is probably the quintessential example of that.
Yeah.
I actually don't want to see that against the Georgia Tech team, who, when it was more fluid and moving and space and separation, they were great down in Atlanta. So I hope that's replicated here, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I think they almost need to get back to that, Luke, heading into the postseason if they want to be effective, because I know the NCAA is full of grinders like that, but I think it would do Virginia well if they could get away from that a little bit, just like you say, to have more movement and spacing on the floor. To me, they're just so much more effective when they can do that.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that relates to rhythm. It relates to confidence. And North Carolina, for example, is another great situation where they went, what, 8 minutes? Just one of those lengthy droughts. And you really don't want to see that type of game against Georgia Tech, because I bet you'll be able to hear a needle drop if they are trailing and it's in the second half and the screws start to turn and everybody gets super tense in that arena on the team. So hopefully it'll be at the opposite on senior night, as we mentioned.
Yeah, I totally agree. It could turn into a pretty rowdy atmosphere if they're playing well, and I think that's what they need.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The barn has been family-owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big-time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
They have to win this game, don't they? I mean, if they don't.
Yeah. I believe so, because I can't see a pathway to the ACC title game. I mean, you never want to say never, but they're going to have to run up against the Duke team who pretty much dominated them and Cameron a week ago, roughly. So if you lose this game in the regular season finale, you're pretty much trapping yourself into a quarter of needing to win two games in the ACC tournament, in my estimation. If I'm considering how bracketologists are sorting this thing out and what I think the committee is going to look at and the people I've talked to over the course of the last week and a half. And yes, I believe Virginia is a tournament team, but the criteria that's being used this year seems a little different. And I've been going back to the fact that, you know, your total number of wins doesn't count for as much as it used to back in the day. I mean, Virginia's exceeded expectations. I think they were projected to win 19 games this year. They've already gone over that mark, and I think we'll continue to do so. But if we're thinking about a pure bid, if you win in the finale against the Ramblin' Wreck and you win against what we assume will be the sixth seed, I don't know, there could be an upset, and who knows who the sixth seed is. If it's Syracuse, I think Virginia loves that. If it's Wake, it's more challenging, I believe. But if you win that game against the sixth seed in addition, they're in my mind.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I felt that way all along, and I think we were talking just before we started the show that some of the bracketologists have them as the last team in the field.
That's correct.
That certainly doesn't bode well if they lose to Georgia Tech. So I agree. I think they're a NCAA team, and I think if they beat Georgia Tech and then win their first game in the ACC tournament, whoever it's against, I can't see them. They could get back to maybe like a 10 seed or something like that. I don't know, but they don't match up well with Duke, as you mentioned. I think they could play five times and maybe not even come close to winning the game, unless Duke's having an off night. But yeah, they need to take care of business. And it's funny, Luke. I guess back before the season started, and when Virginia was predicted to finish fourth in the ACC at the ACC Media Day down in Charlotte, everybody was pretty giddy and about top four. Yeah, that sounds pretty good, considering that we didn't really have a team back in April.
That's true. Uh-huh.
There was only three players on the entire roster, because we weren't even sure if Reeks Bigman was coming back. And my God, thank goodness he did. Or can you imagine what this team would be like if he had not come back?
I cannot imagine. I really can't.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, they've had, certainly had a roller coaster ride this season, and I don't think it's worked out the way Tony expected either. I mean, he told us back in October that, hey, the team that you're going to see in November and December is not the team you're going to see in March. Well, it turns out that they kind of are.
Yeah, I agree. I would agree with that.
And he, I don't think he expected, I think he expected a lot of these guys to be develop into better shooters, better scorers. And certainly that's been a big letdown. We've dissected it all season long that, you know, if you cover up McNeely and you cut down Bigman's driving lanes, then, you know, it's up to the rest of the team to beat you. And they haven't done a very good job of that.
Yeah. And if we're going to talk big picture,
yeah,
I think, you know, this has been a roller coaster year for Virginia fans from an emotional standpoint, because, you know, I think when this recruiting class, who are now sophomores, came in, there was this vision that you would have Ryan Dunn, Leon Bond, Isaac Trout, and Isaac McNeely together as sophomores. And then you would have Caden Shedrick and Reese Bigman as your seniors. And that would be your core. And if that team was currently in Charlottesville, all those guys, yeah, I think they would have been a little bit better this year. But that's not how college basketball works anymore. You have the transfer portal that's, you know, sucking players into it left and right. And it's not just Virginia. I mean, look at Carolina's class with RJ Davis. He's the last guy of six who was in his class when they committed to Carolina. So it's all over the place. But I think that's what makes it most frustrating for fans, because you had a vision of when that recruiting class, which had promise and still has promise, was going to come in. But now we might be left with Bond and McNeely in that class heading into the future. And that's still a question mark, because I would assume Ryan Dunn has gone to the league, because it's a down year in the draft and he's still projected to be a top 20 pick at this point. So I think that's where, you know, fans have, you know, just that irritation. I don't think it's necessarily a disappointing year, because they were projected to not make the tournament and they could exceed those expectations. And I think that's what everybody's rooting for at this point. And they finished higher, or we project they're going to finish higher in the league standings than they were pegged in the preseason. They were pegged at fourth. They could end up at fourth. There is a scenario where they could drop down to that spot. But overall, yeah, it's been a strange year of emotions, because if you look at next year, it's hard for Virginia fans to say, well, next year we'll have this class and they'll be juniors, because you might only have two of them left. We'll see what happens. And you're going to have a freshman point guard. We'll see how good Bliss is. A lot of spots on the roster to fill. They'll have to go back in the portal. And the portal has not been that fruitful over the course of the last three seasons, in my mind, if I'm considering how Virginia's done. Now, they were a great transfer portal team, but before the term portal was around, and they were getting Anthony Gill,
right,
and they were getting players who would sit out a year. I mean, even Austin Nichols, he didn't pan out, or he only played one game. But that type of guy was really beneficial for Virginia. Braxton Key's another one who we can mention. So that's where I stand, and I think that's the general sentiment from UVA fans. Yeah, grateful for this season, but it's hard to say there's excitement for next year, or wait till next year.
Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns, like you said. With I think Christian Bliss is going to be pretty good, but you know, you never know until you see him out on the floor against live competition. Usually, before he had his ankle surgery a couple of weeks ago, every time I would leave the arena late night, I'd go out through the floor, walk out on the floor, and Bliss would be out there with a bunch of managers taking shots from 3-point
yep.
for, you know, like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes or so. And he hardly ever missed. And I know that's not the same thing, but I think the guy can shoot it, and that's, I think that'll be a welcome sight. And then the kid from Canada, the sharpshooter who made 13 threes in a recent game, sounds like he can maybe fill it up a little bit. And then you've got Kofi from the West Coast, who's a physical rebounder type. And
Robinson as well. He's redshirting right now.
So, that kind of addresses some of the issues that they've got right now. But again, we won't know that what kind of impact they'll have until we actually see them out on the floor against live competition. But it would seem like that there's at least some promise of some things getting better in some areas for next season.
Yeah, and what I look at as far as recruiting and team building, as I call it these days, is class distribution. And sometimes you can get in no man's land. I think Virginia is in a little bit of no man's land as far as class distribution, where you have a senior in Beekman and even to count Groves and Mitre into that equation. And then you've got a gap, and then you get down to your freshmen, your red shirts, and then your sophomores. And you'd expect that, heading into his career, we thought that Ryan Dunn was at least going to be a 3-year player. I mean, he was not highly recruited out of high school. Everybody thought he was going to redshirt. I didn't think so his first year, because of those glimpses that I heard in Europe. But that's something you expected to have. And class distribution is just so critical, but it's so hard to maintain because when everybody's trying to compare eras right now, if we look back from 2014 to the national title team in 2019, even into 2020, you had this pipeline of players who were nicely grouped in classes. You didn't have a couple seniors and a bunch of freshmen. You had seniors and juniors, and then maybe one freshman like Parentes, for example, who played his first year. So class distribution, that's what I'm most curious about. And I'd like to see more of the portal being geared towards clumping those guys together. And I know Rhodey was a get that was meant for the future, but I mean, hasn't had a great first year in Charlottesville, if we're all honest with ourselves. We'll see what happens from here on out. But that's what it's on my mind as I look at the portal in this offseason and recruiting as well.
Yeah, I agree. And they'll definitely have to get some help from the portal. And we don't know where they may be looking. And well, they may not even know where they're going to be looking at this point. But yeah, and again, you could lose some guys too. You never know. In this day and age, your roster doesn't ever seem to be safe, even though they have enhanced their NIL a little bit to maybe keep some guys around. But it's such a strange world we're living in. It's hard to predict what you're going to have from one season to the next. But yeah, I think they're definitely going to have to be smart with the portal this year and try to bring in somebody that can fill it up. I mean, to me, that's been the biggest disappointment in this team is that they just don't have enough guys who can shoot.
Yeah. Or create for themselves.
Or yeah, and yeah, the what it, essentially it's Beekman and Gertrude, right? I mean Harris to some degree, but his shot has been terrible, and Gertrude hasn't been able to shoot the ball well either, which was somewhat of a surprise, but
Yeah, if we're looking at the two of them, they're a combined 3 of 32 from beyond the arc this year.
yeah, and that doesn't sit well. You can't do that and be effective in this style of play. I mean, if you're gonna have limited possessions to begin with, then you got to make a lot of those count, and that's where the 3-point shooters have to deliver. And I mean, other than McNeely, Groves had his nice streak there for a while, but he's kind of fallen off a little bit of late as well. He needs to find a way to recapture some of his magic from earlier if they want to do much in the NCAA tournament. I kind of thought that going into this season that even though they lost a lot of players, I kind of thought this team would be better than last year's team. I
I
didn't
did too. I did too.
think they'd win the ACC tournament. I mean the ACC regular season. Carolina Duke's too much to overcome, but I thought this team might go deeper in the postseason. I still think that that's possible if they
Yeah, it
can.
still might happen. It's
Yeah,
not off the table yet.
I just think they got to get back to playing the way they were when they had that 8-game winning streak, which was just a better overall game.
Yeah, no doubt. Looking back at last season, I felt as if preseason expectations, especially outside of Charlottesville, national preseason expectations were inflated. And I thought this year they were sleeping on Virginia a little bit. But I was a little bit off on how much they were sleeping on Virginia. I still think they were underestimating this team, and its performance this year has been a slight overachieving campaign. But it does show you that experience counts for a lot, especially in Tony Bennett's system. And even if you have seniors who are in year one, that doesn't necessarily mean massive experience in ACC caliber games and going against opponents who you know, and actually knowing how this system works, not only on offense, but defense as well.
Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store. As a lifelong runner, the pain in my feet was debilitating. Finally, I went into the Good Feet Store and found the answer. Personally Fit Arch Supports. They helped me so much, I ran my first marathon that year. Then because I believed in the Good Feet system so much, I bought the store. I'm so happy to offer my hometown community the opportunity to find relief from foot, knee, and back pain. The Good Feet store is located in the Shops at Stonefield near Trader Joe's. Book your appointment today at goodfeet.com.
This is Chris Slade, former University of Virginia defensive end, graduate of 1993, back on the staff at UVA. Excited to be back coaching my old stomping grounds. You're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show.
Are you surprised that there's been, and again, I guess it comes from various pockets, but I know on one of the podcasts we do, the Jerry and Jerry Show, I do with Jerry Miller, we get a lot of negativity from some of the fans about Tony Bennett and his system. Do you find that much on Best Seat? You may not get it with live phone calls, but do you get like Twitters and emails from people who seem to be dissatisfied? I'm a little surprised by that.
Well, my counter is, you want to go back to the Pete Gillen era where everything was run and gun and fun, and what, you had one meeting with Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament, the Roger Mason team, and you got smoked by Dan Dickow. You want to go back to those days? I don't think anybody really does. You want to go back to never being able to win on a road on a road test whatsoever, having no chance against Duke and Carolina, pretty much, unless you were in John Paul, unless you were in U-Haul back in that era. So, I think the cure to the problem is nothing wrong with the system. That has to stay because that's been a proven commodity. If the right players are in, and you have the pipeline and you have the experience, it's been proven year after year after year after year. Exactly. I don't know why anybody would get disenchanted from, sure, it looks bad at times when they go through these 8-minute droughts, but when it does click, it looks really nice. And we've seen some of those occasions this year. You can date back to the non-conference. You can even date back to that Georgia Tech run to come full circle in Atlanta, where it looked really nice when everything's clicking. So I don't quite understand it. I think fans are skeptical as to whether, you know, Virginia can compete or get back to being in a Final Four caliber class with the portal and NIL. I don't worry so much about NIL. I worry more about the portal. That's what I think is the biggest difference. It's not NIL for me because these guys have plenty of opportunities, and recruiting, for some reason, can't get above a certain threshold. And I don't think that's ever going to change. I don't care who comes in here. If you have, you know, whatever Tony decides, you know, he's done coaching basketball. I don't know when that will be. I have no speculation over it. If you get somebody new in here, I don't think recruiting's magically going to shift. I really don't believe that.
No.
So I would say stay the course to fans and, you know, appreciate the basketball you have. It's not on the level as it was in the previous decade, but that's a once in a lifetime thing. I mean, some fan bases go their entire lives without seeing anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, we may have seen the golden era of Virginia basketball. I mean, it's not to say that it can't happen again, but it's
And it's not to say that fans shouldn't root for it to happen again, because
right.
I'm definitely not in the camp, and I have callers and listeners who have this mindset or mantra of, well, I don't care about anything after 2019. I got my national championship, and I don't care if they ever win a game again. See, that's not a good mentality as a sports fan. What are we gonna just stop watching basketball now? Of course not. So.
Yeah, I mean, and they have. I've been paying a lot of attention to recruiting, and the players that they're in it for every year are a higher level players than what they used to attract, even though some of those guys exceeded maybe their star ratings back, like you said, during the past decade. Some of them weren't maybe that highly recruited, but the guys that they're bringing in now
Yeah.
are pretty highly ranked recruits, and so I would think
And so
that
few of them are committing early. And I think that's another huge factor in this entire equation. When Ty Jerome committed, he looked like he was 11 years old.
they've
Do you
yeah.
remember the photos?
He and Kyle
And
got both.
most of us were thinking, what is this guy gonna bring us to the promised land? He did eventually. But we're not seeing players commit that early anymore. Look at Con Canupel. Till the very end, he kept skyrocketing. Even TJ Power, who got plucked and stashed by Duke and Shire, and I think a lot of that's intentional. It's difficult
I
when you're in
agree.
on these guys early, and he has been in on these guys before anybody else. And the problem is they're waiting and they're waiting, and then eventually the big time programs, whether that's a Duke or Carolina, fill in the blanks. It used to be, I mean, Bill Self in Kansas had a run where they were plucking guys like Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk and plenty of others. It's just harder to get them to commit early. And that's what led to, Malcolm Brogdon, so led to Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter. We keep filling in the blanks left and right.
Yeah, and a lot of programs have met their demise over the years by trying to recruit head to head against Carolina and Duke. You just don't win many of those battles, and
Yeah, just looking at the last year and a half of recruiting, there have been so many coin flips, what ifs. You could even look at Blue Kane at Georgia. He would have been great for this team. He's one. Power's another. I don't know if he would have been, great or anything, but he would have been at least a piece. And then Canupel, we'll see about him next season because he'll be in Durham. And you could even go back to some other players like Henry Coleman, for example, who got snatched and stashed, as I like to say.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of that, particularly from Duke. But yeah, it's interesting. But I agree with you for those people who complain. I spent some time on the show this past week talking about. What you mentioned is that do you want to go back to the run and gun of Pete Gillen and maybe not quite as much, but Dave Leto? I looked up, I think, in back-to-back years under Pete, maybe probably his two best years. Both years they scored between 90 and 111 points 10 times both seasons. They won 19 games 1 year, 21 the next. Like you said, that 21 win year, they lost to Gonzaga in the first round in Memphis. And then Lato had two back-to-back seasons where they won. I can't remember the win totals, but they had, I think, 7 games of 90 to 100 points scored both years. And went to one NCAA tournament, beat Albany in the first round, and lost to
And
Tennessee.
lost to Tennessee. Yeah, that was I've got the win total actually. I just pulled it up. So that was a 21 win year, and that was pretty much peak later.
And so you've got what 11 years there with two NCAA tournaments, early exits, a lot of NIT, one CBI. Yeah, you got a lot of points scored, a lot of flashy run and gun and dunks and stuff, but didn't add up to much. And then you throw that on top of the end of the Jeff Jones era where things kind of went sour. They went 15 years with or more with two NCAA appearances. I mean, the fans really want to go back to that, hire some hot mid-major coach or something and score 90 points a game and set it home or go to the NIT. I mean, that's, to me, that's not a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't quite see that intuition either. I know fans are looking for more offensive punch, and I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
And I think that they can occur within the system, though, because we've seen it in the past. You just have to have the right players. And like I said, you have the right class distribution. And the only other thing that caught me off guard this year, which I miscalculated in the preseason, I thought this team was going to be a little more physical. Because I knew they had length coming in with Bond and Dunn, and I thought that was going to be a huge key. But maybe they need to get a little bit stronger, a little bit more physical, like some of those early teams with Atkins and Mitchell and Mike Braid would come into town and tell us in the post game press conference they're just grown men, you know, and they've been solid defensively this year. I thought length was a problem in 2022 and 2023 even. With that team having guys like Franklin and Clark out there on the perimeter, and you could get shots over them. So I thought length was a little bit of an issue with that team, and Gardner as well, because he was undersized at his spot. And I thought that would change this year, more length. But now I think they need length and strength as something else in addition to a little more offensive punch for the future. So we'll see if they can find it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm looking forward to the day when Blake Buchanan is one of those grown men that Bray used to talk about. I think it's coming. It's just going to take a while.
Yeah.
All right. I think that probably wraps us up. I mean, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, ACC Network, also WINA and the Virginia Radio Network will have that game between Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech, a big one. It's a huge game. Like Luke said, it's a must win, and or you may not make the tournament.
Yeah, but
I think they'll be okay, but you never know.
the last thing I'll add is, and I like to say this for all sports out there, you can't define a given season by whether you cut the nets down, because that's a pipe dream. And for us, for example, you saw a couple Final Fours back in the 80s, and obviously one coming in 2019. But you cannot define a season in my mind on whether you make a deep run in the NCAA tournament, for example. You can have a successful season by winning an ACC title or winning the ACC tournament, or maybe
Absolutely.
getting to the NCAA tournament, maybe winning a game in the NCAA tournament. And the way I look at it is we've got expectations now that are set for this team. Can they overachieve those expectations? Certainly. If they make the tournament, they're already doing that. If they win a game in the tournament, I think that's gravy. So I think there's still a lot to root for in this season, even though I think we all can be honest with ourselves that, you know, this doesn't look like a team that's going to make any kind of deep run in March, but there's still plenty to root for.
Yeah, I concur. I totally concur. You can't live and die with going to the Final Four. That just
You can't go through life like that. It's going to be a miserable life if you do.
I mean, even North Carolina didn't even make the tournament last year. So yeah, it can happen to anybody. No, you gotta have realistic expectations, and I know fans want to dream about what happened in 2019, but I mean that's happened 3 times in Virginia history. So
And let me close here by saying the three things I root for: I root for regular season conference championships, I root for ACC tournament championships, and obviously root for NCAA tournament wins. And you know, Virginia was in a title race for a little bit there. Now they fell off in late February, but at least they were sort of in the mix for a little bit. So that's something to be said about this season. Obviously, their hope springs eternal in the ACC tournament, even though you and I don't think they match up well against Duke whatsoever if they do meet them. But there's still plenty to root for other than just the big dance. And that's what I like to tell listeners all the time.
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective. And I'll go back a little further than you do. I've covered them since the days of Samson, and even in the years after him. It was fun watching Virginia teams get in the NCAA, maybe get into the ACC tournament championship game, making a fairly good run in the NCAA tournament. It was fun. That was fun basketball. And you didn't have to get to the Final Four to
not at all.
And have a great season. So,
and let me tell you something else. You know, when I was growing up, I first started watching basketball with that mid-90s nucleus of Junior and Harold Dean and Corey and those guys. And, they made a nice run to the Elite Eight, but I'll tell you who was talked about more in my household and, you know, with my parents and all their friends growing up was the Wally Walker team. That team was talked about so consistently, and all they did was win an ACC tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And what a memorable run that was in Landover, three games over three nationally ranked teams in 3 days. That was that's still to be celebrated for sure, no question about it. One of the great times in Virginia basketball history. Well, Luke, thanks so much for taking some time out of your schedule. I know you're a busy man in the radio business, in the radio world, and tell people how they can listen to your show every night in case anyone would like to do so.
Thanks, Jerry. I'll tell you what, it's a pleasure being a guest instead of a host for a change. So I thank you for letting me come on your program and talk a little bit more. Yeah, so Best Seat in the House, 6 to 8 weekdays, Monday through Friday. The kicker is whenever we have a broadcast of UVA men's basketball, UVA women's basketball, that's going to trump my show, obviously. So, or UVA baseball at this stage of the year. So pay attention. We don't have quite as many shows as we have during, say, fall or obviously summer, but tune in when you can and just think to yourself, is there a game tonight that they're going to broadcast? And if there's not, you'll hear my show.
And also, Luke does the play-by-play for Virginia lacrosse, so you can catch him on those games as well.
You better believe it. And we'll see about women's basketball. If they get a WNIT bid, I'll be probably traveling all over the country with that as long as they're alive.
Good point there. All right, brother. Well, thank you so much for your time and your insight. We appreciate you. And we'll see you somewhere over the next few days, I'm sure.
Yeah, hopefully in D.C. for the ACC tournament. So until then, Jerry, so long.
Thank you. Thank you. And we'd like to thank our sponsors, the Good Feet Store, the Aberdeen Barn, and Roback Sportswear here of Charlottesville for their great support of our program. If you go into any of their stores or order any of their products, please tell them the Hootie sent you and that you appreciate them bringing you this free content, not only here, but on our website, jerryrackliff.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you soon.